Welcome back to season three of All I Know Is This, a podcast of First Presbyterian Church in Richmond, Virginia. I'm Amy Starr Redwine, the pastor and head of staff at FPC Richmond. And this summer for season three of our podcast, I have been having some wonderful conversations with my friend and colleague, Dr. Ryan Bonfiglio, who is an Old Testament professor, helping us think through the verse Micah 6:8. What does the Lord require of you but to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with God? This has been such a rich verse to unpack this summer. We've had lots of great conversations in Bible studies and after worship. And Ryan, I know people are listening to the podcast and getting a lot out of it because they're telling me that. So I can't thank you enough for helping us to dig deeper into this text and the meaning of these three requirements that Micah offers us.
Well, Amy, it's been so fun to do this with you. I know it has spurred new thoughts and ideas for me. This is a really familiar verse. Mm-hmm. And to have this time just to really spend with it and to ponder what these words mean and to relate them to church and life today has been so valuable. I can't believe the series is almost over. And I'm disappointed in that for a number of reasons, if nothing else, because it also means the summer is almost over.
Right.
And I'm not quite ready for that reality to set in.
I'm not ready for that either, except that it's really hot in Richmond. So I won't mind when the weather turns a little cooler. But
the weather's great here in Atlanta. I don't know what you're talking about.
So far we've had great conversations about Micah 6:8, and then we've dug deeper into what it means biblically to do justice and to love mercy, this concept of chesed. Everybody here at First Pres is walking around saying chesed. Well, maybe not everybody, but maybe a few more people than were before. So today we're going to turn to the final command in Micah's Trinity, which is translated, at least in the translation we've been using, as walk humbly. So maybe we just start off by, tell us what you think of when you hear that phrase to walk humbly. We probably focus on the humility piece of it. At least that's what I think about, and, you know, being thoughtful about who we are and how we understand ourselves. But what do you think about when you hear that phrase?
You know, so much of my life, as a parent now, these concepts kind of run through the frame of my son, my 8-year-old son, Leo. And so when I think of walk humbly, I think of not being boastful and bragging. And that's relevant for our life with Leo. Leo is an amazing kid. He loves sports. So Amy, he's in all sorts of like flag football, the youth basketball.
Nice.
And the kid also, it just loves to celebrate when he does well in sort of this beautiful way. And so there was this moment this past winter in his basketball team where he just hit a pretty routine shot, which is still a big deal for an 8-year-old after all.
Yeah.
But he just had this huge, elaborate NBA style celebration coming down the court after he made this shot. And it wasn't like a game winner or anything. And on one hand, it was this like beautiful, youthful joy. And on the other hand, my wife and I thought, we probably need to talk a little bit more about what it means to walk humbly in sport. So that's kind of my go-to, is thinking like, tamp down your celebration dance.
Yeah, I can see that. And I'll tell you, the family that I grew up in, not bragging was a real value. It was something that was kind of, you know, something that we were taught. And I have a sports story that's kind of the opposite, because I think if you play sports long enough, for most kids, they're going to get humbled whether they like it or not. And our middle son, Quinn, is a big baseball player and has played baseball for a long, long time. He was never really a pitcher, but when he was young enough, they would kind of rotate everybody through. And he got put on the mound one day when the bases were already loaded and they were playing a team that was a lot bigger than they were. He was maybe 9 at the time, so about the age you're describing, Leo. And the next person up at bat hit a grand slam off of him. And I will say what I was most proud of is that he, and that was how they won the game, was like a walk-off grand slam. He left the mound as the kid was running around the bases and like patted him on the shoulder. So that was a moment of, you know, pride. But also he got in the car and I remember just turning around and was like, ice cream, you know, we're going to go like, brush this one off. But yeah, sports, you know, they give you those opportunities for both pride and humility. So is that what this phrase is about, this walk humbly?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, a lot of English translations, it suggests that just in even in the translation itself, walk humbly. That's what we have in the New Revised Standard Edition, which many of us use. And I think that possibility is there, Amy. And there are other parts of scripture that really uplift this idea of humility as a Christian virtue, not of self-deprecation, but of speaking honestly about oneself and having a sense of context and self-reflection about our accomplishments and who we are and those sorts of things. And so that's there biblically. But one of the really interesting things about this verse is that it's not actually there in the Hebrew. In Hebrew, there are several ways of talking about being humble in that sort of not boastful sense of the term, but none of those grammatical ways of talking about humility actually appear in Micah 6:8. The word that's used, since we've been geeking out on some Hebrew this summer, I'll give you another. The word that's used is tsana, and it actually has a similar sound as hesed in many ways. But tsana, it's really tricky because it's the only time this word is used in all of the Old Testament. So we can't, you know, as was the case with hesed, we could look at other verses and say, well, how is this word used here and what can we learn from it? But we can't do that with tsana. So what that means is that translators have really struggled to make sense of what this word means. And this goes all the way back through the centuries. Even the earliest translations of the Hebrew into Greek, which comes from the time of Jesus, translators struggled with this. And so one can find translations like walk with care, walk in a cautious manner, walk attentively. And what's striking about all of those, and there's many others too, is that they really don't have anything to do with refraining from being boastful. They're all about paying attention. So it's about how you walk, but it's walking with a certain attentiveness. In fact, I think you could translate here something like walk attentively. So the question is, Amy, attentive to what, right? We did some hiking in a recent vacation with my family. We love to do that on family trips. And we were walking on not a difficult trail, but a trail where, you know, it was not even pavement or something like that. So one had to just be careful about where one stepped. And just as I told my son Leo to do that very thing, I, of course, wasn't looking and tripped. I mean, that's talk about combining our ideas of humility and being humbled as a parent. But there's this question of what then do we need to be paying attention to? It could be any manner of things. It could be sin or idolatry or quarreling with one's neighbor. Mm-hmm. But what I want to suggest, Amy, here's what I'm thinking of for Micah 6:8. I think in the immediate context of what the prophet is saying, I think walking attentively has to do with paying attention to what's going on around you, your neighborhood, your community, what's happening in economics, what's happening in the social sphere, what's happening in the local schools. Micah, as a prophet, is very deeply aware of not just what's happening in the temple, but what's happening out in the public square, out in the community. And so much of what Micah has to say is attentive to those realities. So that might be one way to understand what it means to walk attentively in this context, to walk with eyes wide open about what's happening in the public square.
I think that is so powerful. And one of the things that I keep coming back to about this verse, Micah 6:8, is how these three requirements work together. And so, you know, when you talk about walking attentively and really noticing what's around you in your neighborhood, in your community, in the people around you, it just reminds me of, you know, some of the things we talked about with doing justice. You know, in order to do justice, I think we have to understand the issues of injustice. And we can only do that when we're paying close attention. And I think the same is true with hesed, or loving kindness, is, you know, it's not just random. I mean, random acts of kindness are great, but I think when we talked about it, that's not really what that's about. It is kind of in the context of faithfulness in relationships with our fellow human beings. So I really appreciate this idea of walking attentively of not putting our head in the sand. I think we talked maybe in our first conversation about the sort of public versus private nature of this text and of other texts, and that often we want to think of practicing our faith in private, but that notion is really mistaken, right? It's religion and our faith can be personal, but that doesn't mean that it's private. And I think this idea of walking attentively might help us to consider out in the world, how can we put into practice some of these things that we believe?
I think that really resonates with me, Amy, not just because of the private public dimension, but I think when we think of religion as private, we often then also think of it as very individualistic. Mm-hmm. It's me and Jesus. It's my quiet time. It's my belief. Yeah. It's my prayers, my devotions. And one of the things that strikes me about Micah 6:8 is that all of these things Micah names, to do justice, to love mercy, to walk humbly, they're all actions, mm-hmm. but they're also are all communal. They imply not only this vertical dimension with God, but also this horizontal dimension with neighbor. One can't walk, love, and do in isolation from others. It is deeply communal. And so in that sense alone, Micah brings faith out into the public, and it says, This is how you are with one another. This mm-hmm. is a community ethic. This is a community code for how to build a good neighborhood amongst your friends and strangers alike.
Yeah, I think that's so important for us to always keep in mind. And of course, there is that juxtaposition of the personal and the communal, or the individual and the communal here. But clearly, when we remember the context of Micah and Micah as a prophet, and what the prophets were so often doing was calling out the people to say, hey, you need to be paying attention to what's going on around you, and particularly to the people who are being neglected, who are in need in some way, and the importance of putting our faith into action. So I love that you point out these action verbs that Micah chooses here.
And there's something with this too, that I think Micah has a sense of the integrity and authenticity of the community's witness mm-hmm. through these public actions. I think I remember learning in seminary this idea that ethics is how we act when no one is looking. Mm. But Micah, I think, is talking about how we act when everyone is looking. These three verbs, to do, to love, to walk, they're public acts. It means that those who didn't follow Yahweh, those on the outside, would have been able to understand the faith of Israelites through these public actions. And so I think then what's at stake is not just how they express their faith in this communal way, but it's how other people come to know this faith, and by extension, how they come to know that God worshiped by the Israelites. And I think a lot about that in Christian spirituality today. How do we act when everyone is looking, right? Not just when no one is looking. That's super important too.
Right.
But how do we act when everyone is looking? What is the nature of our witness? Not in the sense of necessarily the explicit form of evangelism, of kind of sharing the gospel by word, but how do we, what is suggested about Christianity by how we behave in public?
That's such a great question for us to consider. And I think it's a question, again, that both has this personal component to it. you know, we have, like I think a lot of churches, we have stickers or magnets that people can put on their car with our logo and our name. And sometimes I think, oh, maybe that's not such a good thing, you know, because I don't know. Man. I'm not always in my best when I'm driving or I'm in a hurry. And then I think, oh, no, you know, did I just cut somebody off and they're going to see this church sticker on the back of my car and think, really? So there's the personal. Yeah,
absolutely. There was a mega church here in the Atlanta area that actually, speaking of Micah 6:8, they had Micah 6:8 on a bumper sticker or some sort of magnet like you're describing. And I was driving, traffic here in Atlanta is terrible. I'm not sure how it is in Richmond, but I remember being cut off at one point on I-85. And just like my first instinct was to get like so mad at the person ahead of me, because I'm from the Northeast. That's what you do on the road. You just get really mad. Then I saw one of those Micah 6:8 bumper stickers, and I was like, it made me more mad. I was like, oh, you can't, you can't drive that way. No, right. Of course, I'm sure that I drive that way at times too. But anyway, I hear you on that.
But then the other question to me is there's a collective component too. And I think as a church, you know, thinking about how are our churches known in our communities and are they known? And I think sometimes it really depends and what are we known for. We did an interesting exercise this year at First Presbyterian. Our communications committee did an exercise they called the window and the mirror, and asked people to think about what do you see if you are looking at the church kind of from the outside as if through a window. What does that tell you about who the church is? And then to think about it as a mirror, you know, what do we learn if we imagine looking in the mirror? And I think that was a really interesting exercise for our folks to think about, gosh, how are we known in the community? And I think that's part of what you're getting at here. So I love the Walking Attentively translation. And I will just actually make a plug that in a couple of weeks here on August 14th, we have an opportunity after worship. One of our pastors is going to do a prayer walk in our neighborhood and talk a little bit about the history of the neighborhood we're in, and then walk around, hoping it's less than 90 degrees, we'll see, and pray for the neighborhood that we're in, which to me feels like a really tangible way of walking attentively. But are there other possibilities for this word that's kind of tough to translate?
Yeah, there really are. And just to say, I love that idea about walking your neighborhood. I think that's something that churches, we need to know our neighborhoods. In seminary, we talk a lot about exegeting the biblical text. And exegeting is just that fancy seminary word for interpreting. But we also need to exegete or interpret our neighborhoods and our backyards. Like, what's happening around us? That is such a vital question for the mission of the church. And I think for that first translation, walking attentively, it's doing exactly what you're describing. Now, if that was the only possibility, we could just end the podcast here. We could go have coffee. It would be great, right? But as I said in the beginning, this Hebrew word is really tricky. And there are other possible ways of understanding it, other than this idea of walking attentively. And one of those other possibilities actually comes from modern Arabic. Now, that might seem strange to talk about modern Arabic, but Arabic and ancient Hebrew are actually really closely related as languages. You can almost think of it as like Latin and Italian. They're not the same language, but if you know Latin, you can find your way through a little bit of Italian, and probably vice versa too. Well, it's sort of the same thing with Hebrew, ancient Hebrew and modern Arabic. They're close cousins linguistically. And so there are correspondences in grammar and in vocabulary and that sort of thing. Well, here's why this matters for Micah 6:8. This phrase, this word sana that we encountered in Micah 6:8, it's used in modern Arabic in a phrase that is referring to making something artistically. It refers to a creative process. So to kind of splice these ideas together, it's attentiveness, but with a creative purpose to it. And I really like this possibility, Amy, because as Christians, at least in my Christian experience, we often don't think about moving through the world creatively or artistically. We might think about moving through the world piously or reverentially or something like that. But this idea of that our faith implies a way of being that is creative, artistic, imaginative, embracing that which is beautiful. It's just something that, at least in my tradition, I have not encountered a lot. And maybe the prophet here, Micah, is trying to remind us that our way through the world and a faithful way through the world is a way in which we embrace that which is creative and artistic.
Well, that is fascinating, that connection with the Arabic. And I mean, I wish I could say I didn't know what you're talking about, that's not always something that we Christians embrace. But I think we Presbyterian Christians in particular are often so in our heads and thinking about things intellectually. And often our creativity has to do with words, you know. You know, I think a lot about the fact that we are made in the image of God. And the first thing the Bible tells us about God is that God creates. And, you know, all we have to do is look at the extraordinary diversity of the natural world around us and just see the depth and breadth of God's creativity, and know that that capacity is within all of us. And I even think about in the context of these three requirements of Micah, you know, justice, hesed, attentiveness, all of these things, I think, require some creativity. And it was just last Sunday that I preached on the story of Rahab and the spies. And it was really interesting to think of hesed in that way, because that was kind of a different sort of loving kindness. And you could almost say that Rahab was kind of crafty and creative about how she was going to put hesed to work, not just for the spies, but also to save her family. And so thinking about what it means for us to be creative. And the reality is, in the world that we live in, and with some of the challenges we face, it's going to require creativity for all of us to come to some sort of, to keep things moving forward. Maybe that's a way to say it, to keep walking forward. So I think that's actually a really, another really helpful translation of this phrase.
Yeah, and we need to remember that being creative is not necessarily the same thing as having artistic ability.
Right.
So for me, Amy, I am a terrible artist. Like, if you would ask me to draw a picture of a sunset, it would look like it came from my son's like second grade class. Like, I kid you not, it's a disaster.
Well, but this is just another thing we have in common, Ryan, just so you know.
So, but that doesn't just, so, I mean, there is giftedness with art or music, and people are amazing at that. And some people don't have those gifts. They're gifted in other areas. But I think what understanding Micah this way says that it's not just about your artistic ability. It's about how you work your way through the world. Can you think creatively? Maybe even the word is something more like, can you be entrepreneurial? Do you have the capacity of imagination?
Yeah.
To conceive of a future that's different than the past. Mm-hmm. And one can do that if one is a great artist or not. And I think that's the sort of creativity that I'm picking up on in Micah 6:8. It's not like make good sculptures or make good paintings. It's like, find your way through faith in this world with an openness and an imagination that can wonder through and into new ways of being and new ways of relating to God. And oh my gosh, do we need that now more than ever in the church?
Yeah, absolutely. And I really appreciate that clarification about what the creativity here might mean and the breadth of what that can look like. And I love the idea of kind of the creativity of imagining a future that's different than where we are now. Yeah, we certainly do need that. So what else is that? Do you think that pins it down enough, or is there more?
Well, you referred to the Trinity of Micah 6:8. So in that spirit, let me give you a third translation possibility for this last one. So we have walking attentively. We have this idea of walking creatively. So the third one would possibly be something like walk wisely or live with wisdom. And where I get this from is that even though tsana only occurs in this one place in the entire Bible, there's a related word that pops up in Proverbs 11:2. And there, it's connected to the idea of wisdom. So the one has wisdom, has this attentiveness to it. So wisdom is a characteristic of the person with tsana. Their life is characterized by wise decisions and wise perspective. So that's where we could get this third possibility, that what Micah has in mind is a way of moving through the world that's just infused with the biblical sense of wisdom.
Well, and what is that biblical wisdom? I'm imagining that it entails more than just, again, sort of intellectual prowess.
It does. And this is, we could probably camp out here for another couple podcast sessions.
Because
wisdom is this fascinating concept in scripture and in Christian theology. You know, wisdom is not knowledge. It's knowing what to do with knowledge. Mm-hmm. So the popular adage, maybe you've heard it, is something like, knowledge is knowing that a tomato is a fruit. Wisdom is knowing not to put tomatoes in a fruit salad. That's sort of a simplistic way to put it, but it's more than knowledge. It's more than information. It's more than facts. And the way we get wisdom in the biblical sense is not through study. That pains me to say as someone who teaches Bible for a living, but you don't really arrive at wisdom through study. You arrive at it through life, through experience, and frankly, Amy, through mistakes and failures. Again, this always brings me back to parenting. You know, I would say in parenting, you know, there's all of those books on parenting out there, which sort of drive me nuts in some ways. But look, there are certain things that I would say that parents should avoid universally. And there probably are some things all parents should do universally. Mm-hmm. But you probably know this in with Derek and your life with kids. There's a lot of gray area between the things you absolutely should not do and the things you absolutely should do. And even the best parenting books out there do not give us this turn by turn instructions for every situation. If for no other reason than our kids react differently. Two kids in the same family brought up by the same parents can respond so differently.
Absolutely.
To discipline, instruction, what you name it, right? And I would say wisdom is finding your way through the grayness that is part of parenting and so many other things in life.
Well, one thing that I'm thinking of here about wisdom that to me feels related to the translation we have, walking humbly, is from Psalm 1, and I think it pops up in Proverbs 2, that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And of course, the fear that we're talking about there is not so much, you know, being afraid as it is that sort of reverence, which to me leads quickly to humility, you know, sort of knowing that God is God and we are not, that is where wisdom begins. And boy, I've had just, you know, like you were saying, the humility that comes with parenting. And particularly, I always say I was a really fabulous parent before I ever had kids. You know, I knew exactly what I was going to do. And I knew how all my friends with kids were doing it wrong. And and then you kind of get in there. And just as you said, it's through the experiences that you kind of learn to navigate those gray areas. And, you know, it's interesting that we don't often talk as much about wisdom in the life of a Christian faith. And I think that's partly because it tends to reside in the gray and we are looking for clarity. You know, we're looking for answers to know what's right and what's wrong. And I think it is absolutely true that wisdom really pushes us into those less defined areas. So I think that's really helpful.
Yeah, sorry, Amy, to jump in too quickly. No, you're absolutely right. Wisdom does not take front and center stage in Christian spirituality because I think it's scary. It's ambiguous. Mm-hmm. Not that there are no answers, but there often are less clear answers than we would want. I remember when I first, there's a longer story here, but when I first, I grew up outside of a church tradition and I first got connected to Christianity in college and group I got through very conservative. And while I'm grateful for that period of life and really I got to know scripture and God in that context, and I'm so grateful for that, it was a theological context where there were answers for everything. There were yeses and nos and clarity on everything from theology to practical life. And one of the things that I just came to realize as I got older was just that the world doesn't always work that way. There isn't always clarity on every single issue. And scripture actually embraces that. That's not counter to the biblical witness to say that there's ambiguity. Actually, scripture points us to that ambiguity. We just tend to ignore it because we want that clarity. Yeah. Right. And that sort of brings us full circle with this idea of humility. You know, part of wisdom is recognizing that there are limits to what we can know, or there are limits to what we can know with certainty. One of my Old Testament colleagues at a different institution wrote this fabulous book called The Sin of Certainty.
Ooh.
And he talks about how Christianity oftentimes has erred in trying to be too certain about what scripture says, what theology should we believe in. And so he sort of embraces this idea that God embraces ambiguity and that there aren't always exact answers to the complex questions we face. And I think that's something maybe that Micah is inviting us into in walking with wisdom, we walk in a way that acknowledges our limits, that acknowledges the potential that we might not always get it right, mm-hmm. but that we keep trying, we keep learning and reflecting on those mistakes and failures as we do in parenting. And we keep trying to make revisions and refinements of the way we are in the world.
Well, and what I especially appreciate about that in thinking about it as the third of these requirements for Micah is that, you know, having spent time with the idea of justice and the idea of loving kindness, it's just so clear to me how hard it is for us to sort of get those things right. You know, we're going to try, and a lot of times we're going to fall short. And so I think that idea of humility, of wisdom, of attentiveness is, you know, maybe part of that is just the grace that is required for mm-hmm. us in this journey to kind of hold all of these things together and to keep moving forward and not get so caught up when we realize, you know, either we're not getting it right or we're not making the progress that we wanted, or, you know, we failed to show compassion when we could have. And I don't know, that helps me to think about it in a more dynamic way, because mm-hmm. there's no getting this right. It's, these are not things that that we check the boxes and say, oh, well, I figured that one out. You know, I got justice down. Now I'm going to move on to chesed. but rather that kind of like, you know, my Bible study this week got into a long discussion about the theological concept of the Trinity. And if you want to be humbled, mm-hmm. start talking about the Trinity. I mean, there's just so much about mm-hmm. it that we don't really understand or our words fail to capture. So, but I think part of it is the dynamic nature. The Trinity speaks to the dynamic nature of God. And I think Micah's Trinity speaks to the dynamic nature of a life of faith.
Yeah, I think dynamic is a great way to put it, Amy. In the not yet released RPV, the Ryan Bonfilio version of scripture, I would want to translate something like, keep doing justice or keep loving mercy, keep walking attentively, because this, I think what the prophet is inviting us into is a practice.
Yeah.
And practice means it's not perfection, right? Mm-mm. We practice in order to make progress and to move forward. And it's natural in practicing that we don't get it right all mm-hmm. the time, that we mm-hmm. don't have to be perfect. And I think that's what I would, one of the sort of lasting things I would want us to be thinking about is that this is not an area where we have to be perfectionists mm-hmm. about. Mm-hmm. And I have some of those tendencies. And it's not like we have, as you said, we don't have to master doing justice perfectly. We just have to start doing it. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. we don't have to master loving mercy perfectly. We just have to start playing with it and practicing with it and seeing what works, seeing what we're good at, seeing where we need to grow. The prophet would want us just to embrace the messiness of practice and to see where it leads us.
Well, Ryan, I think that is actually the perfect place to wrap up this conversation, as sorry as I am to see it end. But I really would love for people to be left with this idea of start where you are. You know, that is what this text is inviting us into. There is no time like the present, and, you know, the next moment and the next moment and the next. There's no limit to the number of times that we can keep practicing, keep working on this, and just know that it is meant to be this lifelong practice. There's not going to be this time of arriving. I have just absolutely loved this opportunity to dive so deep into these concepts with you. I've learned so much. It's been such a gift to our whole community. So thank you. And what I'm most excited about is that you'll be here with us in person in just a couple of months, the weekend of October 21st. So I hope everyone will save that date. We're going to have our all church retreat, and Ryan will be here with us teaching us in person. And I'm sure we'll touch, it's not going to be on Micah 6:8, but I'm sure that some of these themes will reappear. And we can't wait to have you with us.
Oh, I can't wait to be there in person. I love these podcast episodes, and I feel like I've gotten to know somehow your congregation just through our conversation, but that I just am excited to be there in person and to put some names with faces and just be in three dimensions with one another.
Yeah, what a concept, right? Well, good. Well, we can't wait to have you. And I'm so grateful to all of you who have joined us for season three. Stay tuned. We might just have a little bonus episode to give you a preview of what we'll be talking about on that All Church retreat in October. But for now, I just offer prayers of support and energy for all of us as we continue to try to live out this verse and do justice, love kindness, and let's see, walk attentively, creatively, with wisdom and humility in our journey of faith, and to support one another while we do that. So thanks again, Ryan. Thanks everyone for listening, and I hope to see you soon.
Thanks, Amy.